Oh, I just cried. Man, this is awesome.
And you hear those stories about, you know, kids, you know, the abortion process getting, you know, messed up, and the baby coming out, you know, with a birth defect because something went wrong, you know.
Right.
And, you know, you just wonder how those babies, when they grow up, how they, you know, end up looking at their parents, you know, who wanted to abort them in the first place, you know. It blows my mind, you know.
I'll tell you, there's a story you might use on in some time. There's a lady one time in Brooklyn who was same situation, unmarried, pregnant, and tried to have an abortion. She jumped out of a second-story window and landed on her stomach to try to kill the baby. Well, the baby was born anyway. And when the baby was born, it had a black shroud around it. The amniotic sac was black. Black and blue, I'm assuming. That little baby, whose mother didn't want her and hated her and tried to kill her, grew up and became Madeline Murray O'Hare. What do you think?
What's that?
Her name was Madeline Murray O'Hare, the baby.
Really?
That the mother tried to abort. Madeline Murray O'Hare, the one that got prayer out of our schools.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Wow.
All right. Anyway, we appreciate you calling in, Tyler.
Well, I thank you.
All right. Call anytime. Okay. Bye-bye. All right, folks, if you want to be on the program, 877-479-DINO. 877-479-3466. 877-479-3466, extension 136. And you can get on the program. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, as many have. Let me get to some of those here now. We've got a whole stack of them in front of me. Or you can email us and get on the program. Okay, here's the first email from Gabby, who says, what does evolution say about the first people? Oh, evolution says they slowly evolved from an ape-like ancestor, and I don't think they could point to an exact time when they became people. The Bible, of course, says that it didn't happen. People produce people, apes produce apes, dogs produce dogs. That's all we've ever observed. And so if somebody wants to believe other than that, they can, but it's not science. So, Gabby, I think the evolutionist would say, the first people were about 3 million years ago, and you tell them I said their theory is dumb. Mucho el dumbo. Okay? All right, here's one from Keith Bittner, who writes in, first of all, thank you for your ministry. My family and I are Bible-believing Christians. I'm interested in intelligent design and disproving evolution, which seems fairly easy to do. My question is this. As I understand it, the world and universe is 6,000 years old. We hear that when looking at the stars, we see them as they were millions of years ago, and they are millions of light years away. How can we see them if they are millions of light years away? Oh, pretty simple. Keith, I cover this on video number 7 for a long time. I won't give a 30-minute answer here. But a light year is a distance. It is not a time. Even if the stars are billions of light years away, so what? You know, how old was Adam on day 6?
Zero.
Zero. How old did he look?
No, I'm not sure, but
53, the perfect age, yeah. Last year was 52. So, yeah, I mean, it's a mature creation. Secondly, we cannot measure those great distances to the stars. I mean, I show on my Seminar 7 all the problems with stellar distance measuring, and it's probably a few hundred light years is the max that can be measured with any degree of accuracy without all kinds of guesswork. Now, the stars probably are billions of light years away. I wouldn't question that. They probably are. I'm just saying we can't measure them. And thirdly, we do not know that the speed of light has always been the same, or even now is always the same. There's a lot of research in the last 10 years showing that the speed of light may not be a constant. So, hopefully that helps. Watch video 7, or you go to our website, drdino.com, and type in, under the search engine, just type in starlight, and it'll come up with a long article about that. Okay? Here's one from Nicholas, who says, how can I explain to kids at my school that God created us because my friend says we used to be apes? He also believes in the Big Bang. Nicholas, probably your best bet would be to give him one of my videotapes. We have a lot of videos we've produced in 6 languages, 7 languages. Over almost 2 million videos now have gone out, or DVDs, and they really would straighten him out, I think, you know, if he'll listen. So, you can read our website. There's a lot of good stuff on there. There's also a good article on drdino.com, quite a few articles you might want to read. Check out the website, the articles there on drdino.com. Hope that helps, Nicholas. All right. Here's one from Nicholas again. Same question twice. We'll just answer it once, though, okay?
All right.
Okay. This one from Jonathan, who writes in, I find it amazing how evolutionists have public school teachers afraid to even allow the Bible be read in their classes. When I was in my sophomore year in high school, I was taking a required speech class. We were to do a speech of our choice. A part of my speech required the Bible to be read. When I read some of the Bible, my teacher told me to stop. She honestly believed it was illegal to read the Bible in a public school classroom. Jonathan, that is retarded. I can't believe it. The Bible can certainly be read. There's never been a law against reading the Bible in classroom. Who on earth? Where did this teacher go to school at? Okay. Here's one from Jonathan again. I have always believed that God created the heavens and earth. I have never believed in evolution until I saw your videotapes that had very little knowledge. Until I saw your videotapes had very little knowledge on the subject. Your ministry's done some very good work. Praise God for it, Jonathan. Well, good, Jonathan. Glad it helped. Our videos, those things stir up trouble everywhere, man. And that's what they're for. We want to stir up trouble. Actually, we want to get people saved or drawn closer to the Lord. Okay. Mike writes in, a friend of mine argued that... Oh, break time. Mike, we'll get your question right after the break. Join us on the other side, folks. About 2 minutes. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Robert Sager live. What is this, Robert?
March 2nd, 06.
And how did they get a hold of us?
We are done with February.
It went by fast.
Yes.
And it's beautiful down here. What is it, 72 today?
Oh, yeah. It's warming up.
It's gorgeous. I mean, this is my idea of winter. I know you folks up north, especially the folks listening in Norway. I mean, I'm sorry, okay? But just, I like Florida, okay?
Yeah, come see us.
A little hot and humid in the summer, but I'll take it. Okay. We'll take it. All right. You can join us on the program. We are the right-wing radicals who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Boy, did some of the students up at the college I spoke at last week, or this week, was it Monday night? What is today? Thursday?
Today is Thursday.
Tuesday night.
Tuesday night for you.
Oh, boy, were they upset when I kept calling evolution a religion.
Oh, yeah, they always...
So what I did, I finally said, I told one kid he wanted to ask, he was asking a question. I said, here's what I want to do. I'm going to ask you a question, and when you answer it, you're going to go from science to religion, and when you do, I will simply raise my hand so you can see when you're doing this. And so I said, you know, I forget what the question was now. We see, you know, dogs produce dogs, and humans produce humans, and apes produce apes. Why would we think apes and humans are related? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, variations happen, you know, within the kind, and, you know, animals produce babies that are slightly different, and if you give it enough time, frustrated him to death. Because I think he finally saw it.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I first heard it, I was like, well, you know, and then finally it hit me. Duh.
They're switching right in mid-sentence.
Yeah, it's belief. You have to believe.
He said, it's not a religion. I said, it is indeed. You believe all these things happen. That's not science. Science is what we can observe, study, test, and demonstrate. This is none of those. Mm-hmm. You can believe whatever you want to believe, but don't call it science, and don't make me pay to teach it to the kids in school. Okay, you can go and join us on the program here, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can instant message us, Dr. Dino Live, or if you want to be first in line, call us. We take phone calls first, 877-479-DINO. Dino, extension 136. Mike writes in, a friend of mine argued that when the Bible claims pre-flood people lived to be 800 years old, they are not actually 800 in a time sense. Rather, they claim that 800 years old means they were very wise. In other words, their age representative their wisdom. Oh, wow. I knew this was not the case, but I didn't know how to approach the question. What are your thoughts? Thank you, and God bless. Okay. Well, Mike, Aristotle, years ago, 2,400 years ago, said, if a person is criticizing a document, the benefit of the doubt goes to the document. The critic must absolutely prove his point. It's called Aristotle's dictum. So, if someone criticizing, which obviously they're criticizing the Bible, saying it didn't really mean, you know, 900, actually the number is over 900, not 800. Adam was 930 and Methuselah 969, etc. Noah was 950. That's what the book says. So I would like to find out how on earth he believes that. Where's his evidence? The burden of proof is on him, not me, not on the Bible. The burden of proof is on him to prove his point. Where on earth did he get such information? All right, anyway, so I would say tell him that's ludicrous and burden of proof is on him. Okay, Shanna writes in, my geology teacher at my college had a question on my test asking the age of the Earth. I gave the textbook answer, but wrote next to it, the 4.6 billion was a belief. He wrote back stating it had been proven by zircon crystal dating. What is zircon crystal dating, and how does that show the age of the Earth? Well, Shanna, there's a long article about, it's actually zircon. Zircon crystal dating is on icr.org. Czech Institute for Creation Research, icr.org. They have a long article, there's a book called the Rate Book, R-A-T-E, which deals with this zircon crystal dating. And long since, I would say, discredited. There's some real serious problems and assumptions built into it. Second question from Shanna. We're covering frost wedging, and I'm wondering if that would have played any part in making the Grand Canyon. It would make sense to me that that happened after the flood rather than millions of years of separation. Okay, yeah, frost wedging is when there's a little crack in the rock, water gets in, freezes, which of course expands 12%, and just about nothing can stop it from expanding. When the water expands, something is going to crack or move. And so that's what frost wedging is. Certainly, I think frost wedging even today plays a part in Grand Canyon and every other rock on the planet where it's cold enough to freeze. So yeah, it plays a part. But no, that was a very minor part, I would say, in the production of Grand Canyon. I think Grand Canyon probably formed in a couple of weeks as a lake overflowed, maybe even a couple of days as a lake overflowed its dam at the low place was where the Grand Canyon is today. Okay, who's on the phone there, Robert?
Jonathan from Paltalk.
Jonathan, yes, sir. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, Brother Hovind.
Yes, sir.
Hey there. We missed you the last couple of days.
I know. I missed the program. I love doing it.
Oh, yeah. I love listening to
it. But, hey, I'll tell you what. The live universities are even more fun.
Really?
Oh, man.
Was it a debate this time, or was it just
nobody would debate. The entire faculty was invited. over 100 teachers who teach something related to evolution refused to debate me, so I just spoke at Virginia Tech. Beautiful campus. They got a bunch of money up there.
Yeah, I've heard. I had a cousin who went there. He was making like 4.0 average, and then he dropped out in his last 9 weeks or last semester or something. He wanted to do something else in life.
We're getting a feedback. Is your radio still on? Or
no, I'm not listening to it.
Okay.
I know the first guy may have been doing that, but no, I'm not.
Okay. Go ahead. What's your question, Jonathan?
Well, I've noticed that while you were gone, I've listened, you know, Robert played some of your, one of your other debates, and I've listened to a lot of some of your other available downloads, and I've come to the conclusion that you are an amazing man, and that you can't, I know that you're right, and you're very intelligent, because you've come to a lot of the same conclusions and a lot of the same examples that I have before I ever even knew of you.
Well, there's two smart people in the world then.
Yes, great minds think alike.
Okay, good.
That would mean both of us. It was amazing. I download it, I listen to it, I go back, I listen to it again, and I realize, you know, I thought of that about 10 years ago or so, before I even knew Brother Hovind here. Wow, and you come to the same conclusion. You make some of the same examples, even. I'm like, wow, this is incredible.
Well, good.
Either that or, you know, maybe self-same spirit, you know, testifying,
right.
Perhaps.
Truth is truth, no matter where it comes from.
Right, maybe we're not such great minds after all. Maybe it's all just God, you know, inspiring us. We're just little people. What I was wondering, maybe you've heard of this or not. This is about, actually, I wanted to start just giving you a little tidbit of information about, perhaps you've heard this, maybe some of your listeners would be interested, since this is involving creation science or how the world, your people were created. According to the Quran, I know it's got a lot of pretty ridiculous things in there. You mentioned, you know, the sun going down into a puddle of mud.
Right.
Well, they say that's poetic license. But maybe, perhaps if you... there's one verse in the Quran, I don't know what the name of their books are called. They've got one book called The Cow, they got another one called The Sheep, I don't know. But this is chapter 86, whatever they call that particular chapter.
Okay.
It's chapter 86. This is regarding the creation of man, how men are created. I mean, it totally goes right in the face of all the science that we understand today.
All right.
It says, according to the Quran, that maybe it's a, I know it's you got a family related show there, family friendly show, but kids can ask their parents. It says sperm comes from the chest of a man. It says now let man but think from what he is created. He is created from a drop emitted proceeding between the backbone and the ribs.
Wow. Email that to me, and I'll look up that reference.
I've got it. It's chapter 86, and it's whatever they call that chapter. It's 86, verses 6 through 8. So 86. In everything we know in, 86, verses 6 through 8. Okay. In everything we know in modern science, and they still want to say that their Quran is scientifically infallible, and it says that, well, man is created from something, and it came from between your backbones and your ribs.
Wow.
But we know where it all really comes from. But yes, that is a real verse in there. That was, Yeah, that's pretty laughable. I was provided that by a very very good evangelist brother here.
Well, they also teach if you pray with your eyes open, your eyes or eyeballs will be snatched out of your head.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
I've talked to a lot of Muslims. A lot of them, they say that comes from the Hadiths, and they were written 200 years after Muhammad or something like that. But that's right out of their holy book.
Wow. Okay.
That was that one.
Well.
I did have a question, a couple of questions.
Sure.
I just wanted to provide you with that one just to bounce it off
okay.
and let you muddle it around. Let me see here. My question was, somebody had mentioned to me the other day in the room, we were talking about, he was talking about petrification, and I was, debating that, showing you that it doesn't take millions and millions of years, it can happen in a matter of years, for something to be turned to stone. And he said, well, that can happen. It's not exactly petrification. It's not turned to stone. It's simply been calcified in a matter of years. Is there any discrepancy between calcification and petrification? They said that something is calcified, it can't be polished.
There probably is a minor discrepancy, little difference, but I don't think it's worth arguing about. Oh, we got break time here. No, yeah, calcification is where minerals accrete, on the substance and in it. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get back.
All right.
We'll be back, folks, 2 minutes. Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Robert Sager. What is today?
March 2nd of 06.
Man, March already. And you can join us on the program. We believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. We defend that position. I taught high school science 15 years and now travel for the last 17 years speaking on creation evolution. And that's what we teach. And we'll defend that against all comers. I've had 100 debates now, and 4,000 refuse to debate. That's all right. You can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, extension 136, or you can instant message us, Dr. Dino Live, or you can email us on the website, drdino.com. And Jonathan, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Someone was complaining, you said, about calcification versus petrification.
Right. They're saying calcification is different because it can be polished, and something petrified can't be polished.
I have all kinds of petrified wood in my collection here that is highly polished.
Okay.
That
so
is,
there's really no discrepancy between calcified or petrified? Or,
I don't know if there's any discrepancy as far as polishing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a calcified teddy bear.
Right.
There's a spring in the Czech Republic where they hang all sorts of things, and they just mineralize in a matter of weeks.
Hmm. Okay.
You found the source. Was it coming through the headphones into the phone?
Do what?
We're getting a bad ring back here today, and we're trying
I don't
to figure
know.
Out.
I'm on a cordless phone. I'm not even at my computer right now. I'm walking around. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't
Sounds
know what
better
that
now.
Hmm?
Sounds better now, whatever it was.
Whatever it was, I think maybe it might have been. It's one of those headphones plugged in, and you're setting the phone next to the headphone.
Something's ringing there.
That was my phone ring. We're shutting stuff off like crazy around here. We're trying to solve the problem. According to evolution, things get better automatically.
Well, it'll get better. Just give it enough time.
Sure. Anyway, there is a minor difference between the two. The end result, as far as I know, is the same or very nearly the same.
Okay.
The cells can turn, the minerals replace the cells, and they turn to stone. There's a book here in the library. Let's see if, Leah, are you over there? She's running an errand. Our librarian's gone. But there's a book called Handy Farm Devices. It was printed in 1909. It was reprinted here a few years ago. One of the things tells in that book back in the early 1900s, was how to petrify wood. There was a formula where you would get a bucket and fill it full of this alum and water and a couple other things, I forget. Put your fence posts in there, let them set for a couple days, and they turn to stone. The bottom half will turn to stone. Then when you dig a hole and plant them, You know, the top is still wood. You can nail your fence to it, and the bottom is stone. It won't rot for 100 years.
Wow.
You know, how to petrify your own fence posts.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You wouldn't have to pour cement in there in that case, I guess.
Well, you may have to do that to pack it to hold it up straight, but as far as it rotting or falling over, yeah.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
I'll have to remember about that. So I guess the question would be, at what point does it change from being calcified to being petrified?
I don't think there's a nickel's worth of difference.
Yeah, is it like inclined that, okay, now it's partially calcified, partially petrified?
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's some kind of a process that takes place there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other question I had was, maybe it's a classic, I guess you've been asked before. I've listened to all of your seminars so far. I haven't heard it brought up, at least not the ones that I can download. How did all of the animals, the marsupials, the koala bears, the kangaroos, the wallabies, the wombats, the duck-billed platypus, the Tasmanian wolf, and all those animals that are commonly known as being indigenous to Australia, how did they get there after the flood?
Well, if you look at the ocean floor between Australia and Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
it's about 30 or 40 feet deep.
Really?
Yep. Real shallow, all through there.
I mean, seriously.
I'm serious.
30 go get, to 40 feet deep.
Yeah, go get a map of, you know, National Geographic has produced this many times, of the depth of the ocean, you know, all over the world. You can look at the depth. I mean, it may be 100 feet deep in places, but, you know, it's just not very deep is the point, you know, from here to the street.
So they just swim across?
Well, no. If you lowered the ocean a few hundred feet by freezing a bunch of water and sticking it on the North and South Pole,
mm-hmm.
i.e. making larger ice caps is going to automatically lower the ocean level. And it's pretty obvious there were larger ice caps on this planet.
Right.
I mean, ice came all the way down to Kansas City, Missouri. So during the Ice Age, which I think was right after the flood, and probably because of the flood, but for a couple of hundred years, there would be giant ice caps which would lower the ocean level.
So this is the fabled land bridge type of
stuff. So they'd be all over the place.
Hmm.
England and France would be connected. The English Channel, the deepest point in the English Channel is 150 feet.
Dang.
Yeah. You know, from here to the neighbor's house.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's plenty to drown in, of course. You get over 6 or 8 feet, it starts to get serious, but 150 feet is nothing, really, on a global scale.
Wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they were that one time they were...
Yeah,
I know they're all connected, and, you know, there's no Pangea theory, but I know under all that water they're connected. I didn't know at one time they mm-hmm. would have all been land between them.
Yeah, on video 6, I show a bunch of the pictures from various organizations that have done... You know, they measure the ocean depth. Of course, they do that all the time for submarines to know where can I hide, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Okay.
Do you know if there's any indigenous animals to Hawaii?
I believe there are. There's a couple of birds, I think, that are only found in Hawaii.
How'd they get there?
That's a good question. How'd birds get to a lot of these islands that are way out there? Even today, there's a bird called the Pacific Golden Plover. Amazing bird. You want to study something that'll blow your mind. The Pacific Golden Plover goes to Alaska, makes a nest, finds a mate, lays its eggs, raises the babies, and takes off for Hawaii from Alaska.
Ooh, time for a vacation.
Well, 2 weeks later, the baby flies to Hawaii.
Wow.
The baby's never been to Hawaii. How does it know the way? I mean, it's 2,000 miles over open water. If you navigate off 1 degree, you're going to miss it by 500 miles, you know?
Well, yeah, I know Hawaii is a little spot out in the ocean. How long do you think Hawaii's been there? How old is that?
Well, different islands have different ages there because it's over a hot spot and there are new islands coming up. So.
Well, yeah, like the Forbidden Islands where that has the actual natives living there.
Sure.
You can't go there.
I think you'll find most of the islands, New Zealand, Hawaii, even Australia, probably were not inhabited, and maybe Australia would be an exception, until in the last 2,000 or so years.
Mm-hmm.
That makes normal sense. As people are spreading out from the ark, it would take a while to take over the whole world, you know.
Right.
And so there's no reason to move until it gets too crowded. That, you know, Daniel Boone said when his nearest neighbor's a mile away, well, it's time to move, you know. And there are people like that who would rather be off by themselves. So I think it probably would take the migration wave several centuries to get around the world, and then probably maybe even 2,000 years. There's still places today that are uninhabited, like that big place they found in Indonesia a couple of weeks ago, you know, 1 million acres, just never been touched. Giant place. I think they've already found over 100 new species.
Gosh, yeah, I almost kind of wonder how they get there.
I wonder if they're going to find dinosaurs in there. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And if they did, would they report it?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. It's just a big lizard. I remember hearing one person say, well, that the Pteranodon, the Quetzalcoatl, the Rhynchocephalus, and the Paranthiosaurus are not dinosaurs. They are just flying reptiles. And I said, well, in that case, the Tyrannosaurus is not a dinosaur either. It's a land reptile. You know, they want to call that. As soon as they find it, they say something is not a dinosaur. It is merely a flying reptile. Well, in that case, well, they're not land. They're not dinosaurs either. They're land reptiles. So let's call them that.
Or water reptiles. Or there's no such thing as a dinosaur there.
Right. It's just a figment of your imagination. The other thing here regarding maybe this is you could use this maybe in one of your seminars. A little bit of information here. You know about the an eagle eye. Everybody knows, you know, eagle's eyes. They have telescopic vision. They can zoom in on a mouse from several hundred feet in the air.
Right.
Is there something else about the eyes of an eagle, besides being a catchy phrase, but they've got some kind of oily substance over their eyes that prevents glaring from the sun, from what I've heard. If this being true that, you know, all life kind of evolved from other kinds of life and lower forms of life, I'm telling you, that would be one heck of a loss of information. I mean, we would not need sniper scopes, we would not need telescopes, we would not need binoculars. We could have eyes, if we kept those eagle's eyes that we had supposedly at one time, that would just be amazing. Hunters could use that, they could just zoom in on their deer from 150 yards, they would never have to worry about missing.
Well, see, for millions of years, while the eagles were evolving that, you know, they all died because they didn't have it, you know.
Yeah, they just kind of flew around and did some guesswork, you know.
Yeah, they never survived for millions of years.
Hey, Joe, you know, what do you think that is down there? Want to see if it's a mouse? I think so. Let's go find out.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, they just had that. They had to wear glasses, you know, some primordial glasses.
Oh, yeah.
All righty there, Ken.
All right, thanks a lot, brother.
That'd be it. Thanks a lot there.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136. And we're trying to find the hum. I don't know if everybody's hearing it out there, but we are sure getting it here. But that's one of the smallest creatures in the Bible, Robert. I think I just killed him. The Bible says the wicked flee when none pursue.
What was it?
It was a flea.
Oh.
I believe I got him. okay. So you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message is Dr. Dino Live. Okay, here we go. Archangel Boy writes in, hey, Dr. Dino, I was wondering if you could address the environmental movement. Is global warming real? Does evolution have anything to do with environmental movement? Thanks. Well, I think man has certainly abused the environment. That's not a question. I think that a lot of people, you know, do things that are pretty bad to the environment. And the Bible says love of money, root of all evil. And there are people who would, just to make a buck, who would, you know, destroy your water supply so they can make money. And that kind of stuff ought to be, you know, avoided or taken care of, or they ought to be punished, whatever. Now, the questions would be, of course, you know, who is deciding when it's too much and who is the government the one to fix it? Those would be real legitimate questions in my mind. So as far as evolution, I don't know that evolution necessarily is tied in, other than many of them worship nature and think that nature is the ultimate, you know. That is ridiculous. I think the real purpose behind the environmental movement is Karl Marx's communist plank number 1, to abolish private property. And I cover that on videotape number 7, about the global warming question is answered there. All right, who's on the phone there, Robert?
Justin Posey from New York.
Justin from New York. Yes, sir, Justin. Go ahead. Oh, Justin, still there?
Yeah.
Okay, we got you. Justin from New York, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Hogan?
Doing great.
I had a question on your first seminar tape, which they're all great, good stuff. And part B, there's a pretty significant list about some people who teach that the Earth is billions of years old, and a good majority of them were internationally known evangelist.
Right.
I was wondering what you based your information on.
You can call any one of them and ask them. They'll tell you. They're proud of it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How can they base their theory of being a Christian if they believe that the Earth is billions of years old?
Oh, they think science has proven the Earth is billions of years old, and they probably think they're heroes, you know, blending science and the Bible. When there's never been a conflict between science and the Bible. There's been a conflict between evolution and the Bible, and there's a conflict between evolution and science, but science and the Bible have no complaints whatsoever.
If you were a renowned evangelist like Billy Graham, though, it should be pretty set in stone that the Earth is at least 6,000 years old, and I mean, it's proven in the Bible. There's a timetable.
Well, yeah, Billy Graham has an older brother, believe it or not, who loves my videotapes and is trying to convince Billy that the Earth is not billions of years old. But see, Billy Graham grew up during the era when Christians really didn't have a creation science movement where they could get answers. And so most Christians in the early 1900s, and even up until probably 30, 40 years ago, most Christians were believers in what's called the gap theory or the day-age theory, because they had been taught, hey, science has proven the Earth is old, now let's make the Bible say that. So the whole young Earth creation movement is relatively recent. 200 years ago, everybody would have said the Earth is 6,000 years old. 100 years ago, probably a real small percentage, even of Christians, would have said that. And today, it's 60% of Americans believe the Earth is less than 10,000 years old. And God
great,
made it.
Mm-hmm. great deception.
Oh, it is. It's Satan's. He's going to be in serious trouble when he stands before God. I can't wait to see him cast into hell.
Well, I'm really your material has motivated me a lot, especially in God, obviously. Do you have any helpful hints? I would like to help as far as on a micro level, or maybe even get bigger, but help your ministry. And I got tapes, and we're going to make copies and give them out. Obviously, prayer is going to help a lot, but as far as going out and interacting with people, do you have any helpful hints?
Well, there are probably thousands of people within 20 miles of where you are that have never heard the creation message. So, yeah, share it with them. You can use my tapes or, go out and start speaking on creation. You can write letters to the editor. I mean, there's 1,000 ways to influence other people around you. You don't have to be a public speaker, though that's obviously one way to do it. Some people are good authors. They can write letters, or they can challenge people to debates, or go to universities and pass out tracts, pass out creation tapes at your university. Get radio programs to call me. I need people all over to be kind of like PR people to call radio stations or TV stations and say, hey, you ought to have Ken Hovind on here.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. I bet you... my wife would be interested in something like that.
But. There you go. I do several radio programs a day besides this one. People call from various areas. I did one today for Dover, Pennsylvania, where I'm going in the next week. Tomorrow, day after tomorrow, I go to Wisconsin.
So you encourage others to get invitations for you to get on a radio show?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Okay.
Don't schedule the time, because my scheduling secretary would have to keep all that straight to make sure there's no conflict.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to do, I could do 3 times more radio stations every day than I do.
Okay.
Sounds great. Come visit.
Good talking to you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, folks, you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can instant message us, Dr. Dino Live, DRDINOLIVE, cabled 2D, 2G. Anyway, hello, I have a question. When was Adam's age counted? Was it from when he was created or when death entered the world? Because wasn't Adam created to live forever? I would say it was counted from the very first day. Yes, he was created to live forever, but that doesn't mean, time started right then. It was the first day, the second day, the third day. I mean, it was normal days right from the beginning. And it says Adam died when he was 930, and if he hadn't sinned, it would have said, well, Adam had his, 4,000th child when he was 8,000 years old, or whatever. It would have just kept on going forever. You could have a large family.
Yeah, huge.
How many in your family?
There's 9. 9 kids.
9 kids. Awesome.
7 sisters and 1 brother, and I made it.
And how many are older than you?
2 sisters.
And how many bathrooms in the house?
2.
Oh, man. 7 sisters and a brother, and you survived. Okay. Well, congratulations. All right, you can join us here in the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136. Yanga Chi writes it. I went to a local high school and got a life science and biology book, and I want to go before the school board and tell them about the lies in the textbooks. I'm not sure of Dr. Ovin's sources for his info. I don't know if they'll consider him credible. What do you think I should do? Okay, Yanga Chi. There's a website called iconsofevolution.com. In a book by the same name, you can get off our website, Dr. Dino, Icons of Evolution. I would recommend you do not mention evolution, do not mention creation, do not mention intelligent design. Just simply require accuracy in the books. Say, look, there's a lie in this book, and just do one at a time. Don't go in there with a whole list and say, I want all this taken out. Pick one and say, look, I'm here to help. You know, I'm a good guy. I got the white hat on. You know, I want to help. You got a mistake in our textbook. I thought somebody should point this out. You know, we really ought to remove page, you know, whatever it is, 221. And get it removed. Make them vote on it. Find out what their local rules are. School boards are different, but probably they have rules where after, if you give 3 weeks' notice that you want to have a particular issue voted on, then it'll be on the agenda and they have to vote. Otherwise, you can just walk in and talk, but they don't have to vote on it. Okay. We'll be back in about a minute and a half, folks, and hang on there. The rest of you guys with questions, we'll be back right away. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Robert Sager live here March 2nd
of 06.
And you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, or 850-479-DINO if you're outside the U.S., and go to extension 136. And we can take your calls or questions here. Or you can instant message us, Dr. Dino, live. And who's on the phone there, Robert?
Kurt from Billings, Montana.
Kurt from Billings. Hang on just a second, Kurt. We're going to need, let's see. Yangachi, let me come back to yours in a minute because our policy is phone calls first, and then we'll finish up with your question. Okay. Kurt, go ahead.
Okay. I just heard you mentioned how Madeline O'Hare was killed, or her parents tried to kill her before she was born. I just looked up that. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
But do you think that it was in the will of God that to save her in the womb? Because maybe government sanction of prayer in the classroom wasn't maybe his will?
Oh, that I don't know. I don't know if it's God's will to have, you know, even to have public schools. And so we may be so far away from God's will in a variety of things here, like, let me get closer. Turn that down just a hair, Robert. Let me get a little closer here. We're still getting a ring back in here. Yeah, that's much better. Okay. I got rid of it. So, yeah, I don't know that we should have, it's probably not God's will for us to even have public schools. Parents ought to teach their own children. So, no, I wouldn't equate that. I don't think anybody should be aborted unless the life of the mother is absolutely, for sure, threatened by it. But that's the only logic. I mean, why is it always the baby has to get aborted? Why don't we abort the mother once in a while and save the baby, or abort the father and save the baby? I mean, it's always the baby gets aborted. Isn't that strange?
Well, I think it's just natural selection.
That's natural selection?
If somebody wants to abort their baby, I think if they don't want the baby, unless there's somebody who wants to adopt it, then I think maybe in those cases it should be, you know, something should be done about that. But, I mean, that's kind of a different subject than what I called, but I was just calling, you know, since God knew that Madeline O'Hare was going to get prayer out of the classroom, maybe perhaps that was, you know, maybe he allowed her to survive that accident before she was born to do this. And maybe that's, you know, I'm just trying to look at it from that way. Maybe the prayer in the classroom with government sanction isn't part of God's will. Whether or not you consider the government, you think that the federal government should be involved in education or not. This is just an issue of whether or not government should be in the business of dictating whether or not the government is, you know, to be saying, okay, you can pray.
No, it's a fair question. That's a good question. It really is. I agree. Probably the government should not be saying you should pray in schools. The government should be, if possible, neutral on those topics. I don't know that it is possible to be neutral on religious issues. I mean, there's so many things it's automatically religious, you know. Nothing you can do about it. If they're really going to be neutral in religion, that's why they should certainly take out evolution. Because it's a religious belief system that some have, and they should teach it at home in a private school. Or, you know, at home or in a private school, not in public schools. And you mentioned about a woman should have, you know, have an abortion unless there's somebody there to adopt it. Two things to consider. There are about the same number of people waiting for adopting babies as there are abortions every year. And secondly, would you then favor that a woman be allowed to abort her baby after it's born? Should they be allowed 6 weeks to decide if they want to keep it, or 6 years?
I don't. Probably not.
Well, what's the difference then? Before it's born or after it's born? It's the same kid, same DNA, same baby, same parents.
Well, it depends, I suppose, on... Well, we've made a decision here that after something is out of the womb, it is considered to be, somewhat of a different situation than before.
Is that a wise decision? Is it really different, you think?
To kill one right after it's born?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's...
Before?
If you killed it 5 seconds after it's born, it would be murder.
Right.
You kill it 5 seconds before it is born, it is not murder. I don't understand the logic here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how far do you want to go back? Do you want to go back all the way till the sperm of the male before it even fertilizes the egg, or how far do you want to go back?
Well, I would say, yeah, at the moment of conception, there is no question it's a human life. At that instant, it's too late. So pro-choice is to choose not to get pregnant. It's not choose to murder your babies.
Okay, well, not everybody chooses to get pregnant. Sometimes it's forced on them.
In the case of rape or something like that, still, it's pretty simple. Abort the father. Kill the father, execute him for rape, and adopt out the baby. There are thousands of people who would love to adopt a baby, even if it was from rape.
Okay, well, there's the situation in the Old Testament where the female was the one who was butchered for sometimes the rape of a male. You know, sometimes she suffered more of a consequence than the male. And sometimes the male had to pay a fine, but the female was, she was tainted for the rest of her life. If you want to look at what God says about the Old Testament.
Well, give me a reference on that. I don't believe that.
I don't have it right with me right hand. It's somewhere, I think, in the first 3 or 4 chapters of the Bible there. Hmm. It's back when it's going through all the laws about, just... I'll look it up maybe next time.
Yeah, look it up. I want to see that
tell you about it. But, okay. But there was something else that I was going to say about this. Do you think the babies are going to go to heaven then?
Well, the only reference we have in the Bible that talks even remotely about that subject is King David raped his neighbor, Bathsheba, and then had her husband murdered, and she got pregnant, and he married her after the husband was dead to try to cover up his crime. And then before the baby was born, the prophet came to him and said, look, this baby's going to die. So David prayed and prayed and prayed, and the baby died anyway. And then his friends came and said, well, why did you fast and pray before the baby died? And now that it died, you're just going on about your business. He said, well, I shall go to him. I cannot bring him back to me, but I shall go to him. Okay. I believe that's 2 Samuel. So that's the only reference that I'm aware of that seems to indicate that babies go to heaven.
Okay, but what about the fact then that all humans are born in sin?
Sure. But they haven't reached an age where they're actually accountable for that yet. And there isn't a hard, fast number there, but most Christians call that the age of accountability, when people are responsible for their own sin.
So then do you distinguish then between somebody who is unaccountable for their sin because of their age, or what about somebody who's unaccountable for sin because they never heard or haven't been in the right situation to properly understand and hear the message?
Yeah, I don't
know. At all, Stephen. Unevangelized people.
Oh, yeah, that's a very fair question. And people who have, the Bible says it'll be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah than for the cities of Chorazin and some others. Apparently, from that verse, there are levels of punishment, levels of hell. People who've heard many, many times, like yourself, are going to be in real serious trouble, as opposed to people who've never heard at all. So they're still going to hell.
Do you think there's going to be different levels of heaven and different levels of hell?
Apparently there are, yeah.
Like the top level of hell and the bottom level of heaven is probably about the same one then? Or?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Are you hoping for that? Are you hoping for that?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure this out. Do you ever think about I always try to think about these issues. I don't know. It doesn't bother me if there's nothing after this life, but I think there probably is because of what we hear from near-death experiences. But you think of hell, I mean, even the highest level of hell would still be hell after a certain period of time. If you could just imagine being here on Earth the way things are now, but knowing everything about which religion is true and everything, which causes us to seek after the truth. But if we knew what the truth was, we really wouldn't have any meaningful purpose in life.
Oh,
and
no.
Even after that, even after then, you'd still, after a certain period of time, even 1,000,000,000 years, which is just a, not even the beginning of eternity, it would just begin to be a hellish experience after some point. Because I mean, even a top level in hell, after all that period of time, would become very, very just hellish.
Well, so you don't want to go there. So what are you waiting on?
Well, I don't think I'm going to go there.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to think of the concept of whether or not everything in the Bible is meant to be taken in a literal fashion, the way that I think you interpret it as, but. And some of the contradictions about whether or not, you know, babies are going to go there. And if that is the case, then what about the unevangelized ones? And what about free will in heaven? Do you think there's going to be free will in heaven?
That's a good question, too.
Free will in heaven. I mean, if there is, then God could have made that like that initially without going through this whole process. He could have foreseen everybody who would have seeked him, and they would have found him. And not only that, but the babies that will be in heaven, who are a blank slate, their personalities are a blank at that point. They haven't made any decision at all. They're going to be in heaven. So the argument that, you know, we decided to make a decision for God, and then therefore our choices are ratified in eternity, that doesn't apply then to the unborn and all that. So there's just all kinds of things that just don't always follow consistently with a lot of these things.
And you think that is sufficient, then, to reject the Bible and accept
God? No, I don't say reject it. I think most of the Bible is a good thing to follow.
Mm-hmm.
However, not everything is meant to be taken literally. I'll try to find those verses that I was talking about earlier.
Sure, I'd like
there's
to
a lot of, there's a lot of things in the Bible that, you know, God told his people to kill other people just so he could have the promised land. And why did God only reveal himself to, you know, one group of people? Why didn't he reveal himself to the other groups of people so they could have seeked after him also? And,
uh-huh.
You know, he has to kill the people just so he can show that this is his people. I mean, it seems like more of a history of humanity than some sort of a divine plan.
Well, I don't know that you or I are the ones who are capable of sitting in judgment saying, God, why did you do this? I mean, he might say, I don't care what your opinion is.
Well, I know that, but I mean, there are so many things that don't make any sense that in the Bible that I think, especially with a young earth view, that, you know, unless it can start to be consistent, then I think we have to at least just look at it as a good historical background of how human beings search for the truth and different issues of how faith can affect humans. And I think that's what the Bible is, just a book of faith, how we can seek after God and have a positive attitude and sacrifice ourselves in times which will bring us closer to God,
mm-hmm.
and to do good in this life. That's basically what it is. But I mean, when you have all this stuff in the day issue, like you make an issue of in your seminar,
right?
Like it has to be a literal day. That doesn't make any sense, really, to say that if you give it to 5,000 people all over the world, that they'll come to the conclusion that that means day. What happens if you give it to somebody who reads a different Bible translator in a different language, the word day, you know that means something. It could have been translated to something else and maybe a different language. Over here in America, you could maybe make that argument, but what about another country?
Well, I think everybody on the planet knows what a day is.
But the word yom, you know that,
mm-hmm.
means doesn't necessarily mean 24-hour period, so in a different language...
No, I disagree.
The people, the culture, the word that they use may not mean that 24-hour period is the way we use it here, because it can be translated to different periods of time.
No, I disagree.
A different country, they might say, when they read the Bible, might say this period of time God created plants and whatever. So you could make that argument here in America, but that's it.
Well,
wherever.
No, tell them to call into my program. I'll straighten them out. Everybody knows what a day is.
But not everybody here in America that reads the English Bible maybe does, but not if it's translated in a different language.
Well, I speak a little French, a little German, a little Russian. I can handle, you know, some of them.
Okay.
All right, then. I'll see you.
Okay, thanks for calling. All right. Thanks a lot. All right, folks, you can call in and be on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, as many have, and we'll get to those right now. Or you can email us, drdino.com. Email us with your questions. And some questions, I mean, you prefer you just give one at a time so we can actually, you know, discuss it. Here we go. Yang Chi writes, local high school, got a life science book. He wanted to tell them about lies in the textbooks, but not sure how to do it. They don't know if they'll consider me credible. Well, I don't know. Doesn't matter. A lie is a lie, and truth is truth, no matter where it's coming from, okay? So I think you should pick one lie at a time in your textbook and say, hey, guys, I think we should take this out. This is not correct. Do not mention creation. Do not mention evolution. Do not mention intelligent design. And I've said for years, I'm not trying to get creation into the schools. I'm not trying to get evolution out of the schools. I want lies out of the schools, and then there's nothing left to support the evolution theory. Well, that's their problem. Don't blame me, okay? I didn't pick the dumb theory. Oh, got a call first. Okay, Dependence, you'll be next. Who's on the phone there, Robert?
Mark from Minnesota.
Mark, Minnesota. Yeah, sure. Yes, Mark, what's up? Oh, got to push one a button second. Here. Hang on. All the buttons pushed. There are two buttons.
We're ready.
Now we're ready. Okay, Mark from Minnesota. Yeah, sure. What's up?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Doing great.
So you're going to be in Minnesota in a couple months, right?
I haven't looked that far ahead. I'm in Wisconsin this weekend. It's close. Let me look here. I go to Wisconsin this weekend, and then next weekend I go to Nebraska. Next weekend, Pennsylvania.
I think it's April 28th. It's like a creation workshop.
April 26th, I'm in Bakersfield, California. 28th, I'm in Mississippi. 1st of April. Oh, April 28th. Okay,
yep.
I see it. Okay, yeah, St. Cloud, Minnesota. Yep, that's it. Oh, hang on. We got a break here. Mark, hang on. Yeah, I'll be there. Creation workshop, St. Cloud University. So we'll be back in about a minute and a half, and we'll discuss that. Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is the final segment today, March 2nd of 06.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, extension 136, or instant message is Dr. Dino Live. And I got a bunch here, and we're going to get to them in a flash, but we have Mark from Minnesota on the phone coming up there in end of April. Yes, sir, Mark.
You said Creation Science Workshop. I think it's Brooklyn Park is where it's located in Minnesota, right?
Well, let's see. Pastor Dave Reno, Grace Fellowship, would know the answer.
Okay.
It has me. I think I'm speaking Friday night, apparently, at St. Cloud University, and then, I don't know.
Maybe it's the 29th.
Yeah,
29th.
There's a note on my calendar that says St. Cloud University, Dave Martin.
Okay.
And then the next day, 29th, says Pastor Dave Reno, Grace Fellowship, Brooklyn Park.
Yep, that's the one that I signed up for, and I think it's like 4 hours long. Is that just like a four-hour-long seminar, or, I mean, what is that?
Probably, yes. With seminar, 4 hours with breaks in between. And then the 30th, the next day, it's Pastor Billy Wood, Grace Baptist Church in Hiram, Georgia. Man, I only speak in the morning on Saturday and then have to fly to Georgia to speak the next morning. So it appears that's... My daughter does all the scheduling. She keeps all this straight. She's amazing. But that's all I know about that.
I guess there was another comment I had regarding that guy that caught it was Nate on Friday.
Okay.
And he was, you know, kept insisting that that a religion, you know, involves you have to have like a god or a theistic or something.
Sure.
Have you ever read anything by Josh McDowell?
Oh, yeah. He's got some great stuff. Evidence That Demands a Verdict, More Than a Carpenter. I've never met Josh McDowell. I'd love to meet him sometime, but yeah, he's got some great books.
Yeah, I've got his book called Ready to Defense, and he's got a chapter on Buddhism where he says that the Buddhistic worldview is basically monistic. That is, the existence of a personal creator and Lord is denied. The world operates by natural power and law, not divine command. And Buddhism denies the existence of a personal God.
Right.
So basically, it looks to me like they don't believe in God. But, you know, I would still consider him religion, though.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so...
Good point.
So I guess that was just kind of a general point that I wanted to make, that, you know, you definitely don't have to have a god in order to be religious.
Absolutely. Well, in the Humanist Manifesto, you can read it for yourself, they call themselves religious humanists, and their first tenet is, you know, the universe is self-existing and not created. And later on they say that we deny the existence of a deity. But then why are they religious humanists? Yeah, yep. Of course religion's human. Religion does not require a deity.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it seems like they just find a dictionary that suits their definition that they're looking for, and then that's what they use.
Right.
So,
all
right. Okay.
Appreciate that.
Great. All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO. The one lonely phone line is open. Go to extension 136, I believe. All the secretaries are gone. You do not have to wait for all the answering machine, you know, hello, sorry we're not here. You know, just skip all that. Just dial 136. It'll take you straight through.
I just looked up and we have 7 new messages, and I checked them before we started. So they're apparently leaving them still. Or I guess people call in. That's what happens.
I guess.
And we have someone on the line already.
Yeah. Well, the answering machine says, do not leave a message here because we may never check it.
Most of them don't leave messages, I guess.
There you go. Well, good. Because we never check it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can send it, but we won't. Call, write, email, come nail it on the door. We'll take it any way we can get it. Here we go. D. Peddens writes in, hey, Kent, if the Madeline Murray O'Hare almost born abortion doesn't shake your pro-life convictions, I don't know what will. Can you imagine God asking you to go back in time and abort her, testing your convictions on pro-life? I'd have to reflect an awful long time. Laugh out loud, D. Petty. No, I would still choose to let her be born. I want to go back 9 months before that and choose to talk to the unmarried couple and say, look, do not commit adultery. And so that's where the problem started. Okay, who's on the phone there?
We've got Carl from Phoenix, Arizona.
Carl from Phoenix. Yes, sir. Carl, go ahead. You got all the buttons pushed there?
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Carl, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. Finally got all the buttons pushed. It's complicated here.
I can believe it. I've been where you are.
Okay. Go ahead, Carl.
I know what you're talking about. I called the last time you were on. We were talking about the geology of the Grand Canyon.
Yes, sir.
And I got a little sidetracked and started talking about something else, and we ran out of time. But the geology of the Grand Canyon area has always fascinated me.
Me too.
And one of the reasons it's been fascinating to me is the river of the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River, runs generally east to west. And then south, when it goes through, after it passes through Boulder Canyon, and then it goes through Parker Canyon and into the Gulf of California.
Right.
There's the geological evidence indicates that the Colorado actually at one time went further west into what's now Nevada, and then south, and apparently into what's the Salton Sea in the Imperial Valley. I got the right. Yeah, the Imperial Valley of California, which is where Palm Springs and Coachella and tremendous amount of farming and the Salton Sea is.
I agree. I've been there many times.
Okay. Now, the Salton Sea, as you drive past on either of the two highways that run past the Salton Sea, if you look west, you can clearly see a water line, a high water mark on the mountains. It's a perfectly level, straight line that's quite clearly a high level mark.
Okay.
And sometime in geological history, the Salton Sea was cut off from the Gulf of California.
I would agree.
Okay. Now, we know how fast water evaporates in the desert. It's about 20 inches per year.
Oh, there's way too many variables to be dogmatic on that.
Okay. And we know that water runs into the Salton Sea at a set rate today. It varies. As you said, there are too many variables. But the position you're taking is that this is a constant. That the input to the Salton Sea is constant. The evaporation from the Salton Sea is constant because the Earth is today as it was within a few days, years, or months after it was created.
No, I don't believe that. I think the flood totally destroyed the world. The world we see today might be fairly consistent within a few hundred years after the flood when the climate equalized.
Okay, but still, within a few hundred years after the flood and the climate equalized, uh-huh. Stabilized and became what it is now. So I'm going to take the position that the constant of evaporation and the constant of inflow into the Salton Sea has been the same since the flood. And I think that's the position you just presented.
Well, no, I would say, there, as I said earlier, there are way too many variables. I mean, you can get the Santa Ana winds You have larger cycles besides just the seasonal cycle. There are, you know, 11-year sunspot cycles. There might be 1,000-year bigger cycles of weather patterns. So I don't know that we know enough about even our own weather today to be dogmatic on any uniformitarian assumptions like that. You go ahead with your thought, but I'm going to reserve that for, you know, appeal that, no, I would not say that what we're seeing today is what we've seen in the last 6,000 or 4,000 years. They're way, I mean, obviously, we go through many ice ages when Europe, you know, was the 1400s. It was, you know, cold, real cold, and now it seems to be real warm summers, or winters even. But anyway, so your point is the Salton Sea's evaporation rate and accumulation of salt rate is going to indicate a big number more than 6,000 years, right?
Well, it's a constant, or at least I would assume that it's a constant.
No, you can have salt domes that leach out and dump a bunch of salt in all at once, and then the salt dome is exhausted, and now, you know, the rate of accumulation of salt is real low when, you know, there was a massive dump of salt from a salt dome or leaching from further upstream. You can have, that water from Wyoming goes all the way down there, you know, so there could be things, multiple things along the way that would influence it. In a court of law, that would never go anywhere as proof that it's a certain age. But go ahead and finish your thought here.
Okay. Well, we have a history on the Salton Sea that goes back to
a couple hundred years, maybe.
Well, 1700s.
Yeah. Okay. 300 years.
300 years. And,
yeah.
And probably maybe further than that. The city of San Diego, for example, was established in 1737, and I believe San Francisco was established in 1776 or 1780.
Okay,
Los Angeles is in that same time period.
But still, just like 300 or 400 years max.
Right. There were Spanish explorers there, and the Salton Sea was pretty much as it is today. Actually, the level of the Salton Sea was quite lower than it is today because in the 1920s, there was a canal project being built to irrigate the Imperial Valley, and the wall of the canal broke and allowed the Colorado River to flow into the Salton Sea and actually was allowing... stopped the flow of the Colorado River into the Gulf of California. And at high tide, the very high tide?
Spring tide.
At spring tide, salt water from the ocean flowed into the Salton Sea as well.
Sure, I believe that.
Now, the level of the sea rose. It was an emergency. It lasted for about a year, year and a half. They blocked they closed off the opening. They dammed up that opening by literally backing a freight train full of rocks into the hole.
Right.
And stopped the flow into the Salton Sea.
Sure, we've only got 4 minutes left till the program's over, so...
Okay, but at any rate, the rate of evaporation is relatively constant over the last 300 years.
You just mentioned a serious problem with that rate in the last 50 years, or 100 years.
Well, yeah, there was a change.
Okay.
But before the change and after the change, the salinity was known, the level was known,
okay.
And so the change was measurable.
Mm-hmm.
And it took many thousands of years for the water level to evaporate from the point at which the water line shows to the point at which it is now.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, there had to be a change to close off the Salton Sea from the Gulf of California.
Oh, yeah, ground substance, subsistence, what's the word?
These are all changes, and they're all changes that are identifiable and generally measurable over long periods of time as constants.
Okay.
And that's what's throwing me, because the constant of erosion in the Grand Canyon today is, I don't remember what it is, it's like 3/4 of an inch or 1/8 of an inch a year.
Yeah, whatever.
The river level is dropping. These are measurable constants, and now we've changed it by man-made stuff by putting in Glen Canyon. We've reduced the erosion in the Grand Canyon.
Right.
Cut down the amount of sand available and so on.
Sure.
Now, these constant rates of erosion, evaporation, inflow, and so on go back too far for what you're contending to be accurate. It just takes too long for this to happen, for it to be the way it is now, unless there have been massive changes in climate, elevation, inflows. In other words, it has to have become inconstant in order for... It has to have been an act of God that changed all of this many different times.
No. You're doing exactly what 2 Peter prophesied would happen. He said in 2 Peter chapter 3, in the last days there would be scoffers who would be ignorant of the creation and the flood, and who would say the way things are happening now, basically the ways they've always been happening, uniformitarianism. started by really by James Hutton, or Charles Lyell, or who we're going to blame for. New Braunfels, Texas, there was a canyon lake, 2002, there was a flood. The river normally flows through a channel across the spillway. Well, the flood caused it to flow around the dam that had been built at the canyon lake, New Braunfels.
Canyon Lake, Arizona, or Canyon
No, this is Texas, New Braunfels, okay. Texas. It carved a brand new channel. I'll show pictures to Robert here. He can verify this. Here's where the water normally goes over the dam and where the river was dammed up, okay? Mm-hmm. The water flowed way around it, made a brand new channel. What you're describing with the Grand Canyon is probably correct. The Colorado River had a different channel, and finally, during who knows when, it overflowed a different spot and made the Grand Canyon. The New Braunfels flood in 2002 is from 30 inches of rain in 1 week. The spillway of the Guadalupe River overflowed, carved out, and I'll show the canyons here. It's got buses and flood. Okay, the river carved a canyon a mile long, 50 feet deep, and hundreds of yards wide through solid limestone rock.
Wow.
Articles at San Antonio News, November 21st of 03. Here's another article from Austin American Statesman, statesman.com, July 2002, about the canyon that made 70 feet deep through solid rock, boulders the size of mobile homes ripped away from the earth, happened over the 4th of July weekend. So the canyons can form very rapidly. Grand Canyon had to form within a matter of, well, the Burlingame Canyon in Washington carved in 6 days.
How deep is it?
I would say Burlingame Canyon is probably 100 yards deep, 300 feet. The one that carved in Mount St. Helens carved in 9 hours, three of them.
Okay, but it's 100 yards deep, which is, what, 3,000 feet?
This is 6 days. No, all time's up. Hey, call in tomorrow. We'll be live again tomorrow. We're glad to continue the discussion, and thank you for calling in, Carl. We appreciate it. Folks, okay. We'll be back in about a day. See you tomorrow. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye, Doc. Bye.